Well, good morning. It's good to see everybody this morning. Hope you're all doing well. You know, I got to thinking about it. You know, a couple weeks ago, we're glad everybody made it. It was snowy and a little icy. And, well, today I'm glad you made it. It's sunny and bright. And people like Ed think it's nice outside. And right, Ed? Okay. I left my jacket at home well, I didn't really, but that's because I grabbed it because that's where my keys were as I ran out the door. But, you know, it's very nice out today, and so we want to be thankful for that as we worship our Lord and Savior this morning. Was a prayer request that didn't make it into the box this morning. Keep Wayne Driver in your prayers. Alicia says he's, while he is recovering, he's not doing as well as he would like and makes it difficult. And so things are compounding on him at the moment. And so he could just use our prayers today. So keep him in your prayers especially. Several years ago, I know it was several years ago now, because before Lauren was born, I wish I remembered more of the details. You know, I can't tell you what I was wearing. I can't tell you where I was standing. I can't tell you much of anything except for I'm sure I had coffee earlier that day. It has nothing to do with what I'm going to say, but just so you know. We were visiting with family, and my mother's mother was there. My grandma was there, and we knew we were expecting Lauren, and I just happened to mention to my grandmother, when nobody else was around, that Brenna was expecting. And my grandmother said to me, ever so nicely, she said, okay, I won't tell Sharon. And that's how she always referred to my mom. She never said your mom. It was always by her first name. But the thing is Brenna was like 5 months pregnant, and it was right on the verge of not being able to hide it anymore. And but my grandma thought she was in on a secret that nobody else knew. The truth was, the rest of my family had known for like 4 months, and we had kept it from a secret from my grandmother because she'd had some health problems. But there was something about that moment when she thought she knew something important that she didn't think she was supposed to tell anyone else. And there are times in life when we get that kind of information, when we get that kind of news, we're told something, we hear something, we learn about something, and for whatever reason, we know that we need to hold on to that news and hold it privately. And there are different emotions, different feelings that we get in that situation. Sometimes it's a feeling of excitement. You know, and I think my grandma was truthfully excited that day. She had some news she didn't think anybody else knew. And we let her go with it. We just let her go with it. She was excited. There are times when it can be a little disheartening. You know something and you want to share it with somebody else because it weighs heavy upon you and you want somebody else to share the burden with you. There are times when it's just downright frustrating, when maybe you are a little excited about it but you can't tell anybody else because it isn't time yet, and so you've got to kind of bite your tongue, and it gets frustrating at times because you want to let it out. You want to let other people know what you already know. Now, I'm not sure what Zechariah was feeling, but what I know is that in life, that there are times when we have those same feelings, those feelings of joy, those feelings of disappointment. And there's one more, and it's one that I think probably is at least part of what Zechariah was feeling, and that is the fortitude to trust God even in the face of the news that he knew, but knowing that he probably wouldn't see all of what God had said. That there comes a point when you know the truth, but you know that you're not likely to see it play out, and it takes a lot of faith and a lot of trust to believe that God is going to do what he said he was due. And I am certain that there is some of that present in the story of Zechariah and Elizabeth that we find in Luke chapter 1. That's where we're going this morning. Last week we were in Luke chapter 3, so this morning we're backing up a little bit to get some more information about the one man that Luke told us was coming. We're going to be in Luke chapter 1. We're going to start with verse 5 this morning. And Luke records, he says, "In the days of Herod the king of Judea, there was a high priest named Zechariah of the division of Abijah, and he and his wife, he had a wife from the daughters of Aaron, and her name was Elizabeth. And they were both righteous in the sight of God, walking blamelessly in all the commandments and requirements of the Lord. But they had no children because Elizabeth was barren, and they were both advanced in years. Now it happened that while he was performing his priestly service before God in the appointed order of his division, according to the custom of the priestly office, he was chosen by lot to enter the temple of the Lord and burn incense. And the whole multitude of the people were in prayer outside at the hour of incense offering. And an angel of the Lord appeared to him, standing to the right of the altar of incense. Zechariah was troubled when he saw the angel, and fear gripped him. But the angel said to him, 'Do not be afraid, Zechariah, for your petition has been heard, and your wife Elizabeth will bear a son, and you will give him the name John. You will have joy and gladness, and many will rejoice at his birth, for he will be great in the sight of the Lord, and he will drink no wine or liquor, and he will be filled with the Holy Spirit while yet in his mother's womb. And he will turn to many the sons of Israel back to the Lord their God. It is he who will go as a forerunner before him in the spirit of power of Elijah, to turn the hearts of the fathers back to the children and the disobedient to the attitude of the righteous, so as to make ready a people prepared for the Lord.' Zechariah said to the angel, 'How will I know for certain? For I am an old man and my wife is advanced in years.'" And you notice, smart boy. He didn't say my wife is old. She's just advanced in years. Learned from Zechariah, guys. "The angel answered him and said to him, 'I am Gabriel, who stands in the presence of God, and I have been sent to speak to you and to bring you this good news. And behold, you shall be silent and unable to speak until the day when these things take place, because you did not believe my words, which will be fulfilled in their proper time.' The people were waiting for Zechariah and were wondering at his delay in the temple. But when he came out, he was unable to speak to them, and they realized that he had seen a vision in the temple. And he kept making signs to them and remained mute. When the days of his priestly service were ended, he went back home. After these days, Elizabeth, his wife, became pregnant, and she kept herself in seclusion for 5 months, saying, 'This is the way the Lord has dealt with me in the days when he looked with favor upon me to take away my disgrace among men.'" There is a story here. There is information that Zechariah has that isn't given to the greater public. At least not in the fashion that it's given to Zechariah. And I want us to consider that this morning because it has application for our life as well. When when God sends the angel Gabriel to Zechariah to tell him about the birth of John, it isn't just about John. It isn't just about this child that he and his wife are going to have within the following year. Oh, the promise is about the child. The promise is given to Zechariah that he and Elizabeth will have a child. And that's important for them. It's important the way the angel comes and the way the angel tells him this, because I imagine the way that Zechariah responds to the angel when he turns to the angel and says, I am old and my wife is advanced in years. He's looking at the angel and he's saying to him, excuse me, but my wife and I are past the age of bearing children. It's probably been a prayer that they had prayed for years. And eventually that prayer stopped being prayed. Eventually they aged enough that they said it's past the point of being a prayer. But the angel came to them, or to him, to Zechariah, as he was offering incense in the temple, and said that your wife will conceive and give birth to a son. And then the angel begins to describe a little bit about this child to him. It isn't just the birth of a child, but it's a birth of a special child. And the angel goes back and he begins to use the words of God that have been spoken in the past. And if your Bible is like mine, in the middle of 17, after it says that the spirit of the power of Elijah will be upon the child, it then has, mine at least, has it in all caps to indicate that this is a quotation from the Old Testament. When the angel says that he will turn the hearts of the fathers back to the children, the angel begins to quote to Zechariah, who was very well versed as one of the priests would be in the scriptures of the Hebrews. He was well versed in the things that God had proclaimed and the things that God had said to the people. And the angel says that this is the child who will come in the spirit, or come with the spirit of Elijah upon him. And then he quotes what the child will do, and in doing that, he begins to show Zechariah that God is about to fulfill the promises that he had made in the past. Because the one who was supposed to come in the spirit of Elijah was to come before the Lord. He was to make a path that was straight, a path that was prepared for the Lord, so that the Lord could come and do His work. And so there is the promise that God makes to Zechariah about the coming of the Son, but then we also have to look and remember that it's the promise that God will fulfill the promises that He has already made. And we could go back and we could begin with Genesis chapter 3 and the promise that was made, well, kind of to Adam and Eve, but more directly to the serpent, that there would be this ongoing battle between the seed of man and between the serpent. We call it the proto-evangelism. You know, it's that first mention of the cosmic spiritual battle that is taking place between Jesus and the Satan. We could flip forward to the promise to Abraham that all of the nations would be blessed through his seed. His son, his descendants would bless all of the nations. And we could see that. We could go forward even farther, and we could come to David when God promises David that he will always have somebody to sit upon his throne. We could look at other prophecies throughout the Old Testament that are promises that God made about the coming of the Messiah, the coming of one who would save the people from their captors, who would set them free. And God is looking at Zechariah through the angel, and by quoting the scriptures that have come before, by reminding Zechariah of the things that he was familiar with as the words of God, God was telling Zechariah, I remember my promises, and they are about to be fulfilled. I am about to carry out what I have promised to do through my people Israel and for my people Israel. See, God, in sending the angel and using the things that Zechariah was familiar with, was saying that he'd fulfill his promise, and the greatest of those promises is the promise of salvation. That he would save his people. And while we can't go back and we can't live this with Zechariah, we can't see the excitement and the exuberance on his face, the jubilation of his spirit, we can't see any of that. What we have is we have the promise of God that just like God had made to the people of Israel, that a day of salvation is coming. We have the promise of God that one day Jesus Christ will come again. As Paul says to the Thessalonians, he'll come with the shout of the archangel and the sound of the trumpet. He will come with fanfare, and he will come this time as a king who has conquered. He will come this time as a groom coming to meet and take his bride home. He will come victoriously as the one that we have been waiting for. For Zechariah and the people of Israel, it was the promise that God was about to bring salvation to them. To us, it's a promise that while we have salvation in here and now, that there is another portion of that salvation, a fuller understanding of that salvation that's yet to come. But with many of the things that God says to His people, it isn't just about the proclamation. There is the sign that accompanies it. There is a sign that accompanies God's message to Zechariah. And I know that as we look at this sign, it comes because of Zechariah's questioning. Questioning how he can trust the angel and how he can trust his message. And I think I'd be with Zechariah. If somebody came to me today and you guys have all stepped out there and I'm in here by myself, and I don't know why I'm in here by myself and you're all out there, but just for a minute, say you are. If the angel came to me as I was standing here and said, Rocky, I just want you to know that Brenna is going to become pregnant and give birth to a son. I'd have some questions too. But But that's where Zechariah was. I mean, he says, I am an old man and my wife is well advanced in years. And I can tell you that if the Levites and the priests were following the rule of God, there is an upper age limit for about how old Zechariah could have been, and that's about 50. You know, they had mandatory semi-retirement for the priests at age 50. They'd work from 30 to 50, and then they would be able to assist, but they could no longer carry out the functions of the priest. And so Zechariah is looking at the angel and saying, look, I'm an old man. And my wife is past that age when women give birth to children. How can I know that this is going to happen? And I think I would ask the angel the same question, along with a few others, but that one in particular. But as we look at this, we can see that there is this purpose, this plan of God that is taking shape here to make sure that everything is working out and carried out according to His will. It begins with the fact that Zechariah is chosen by lot to offer the incense that particular day. Zechariah was probably nearing the end of his service as a priest, and what history tells us is that a priest would likely only get to offer incense once in their lifetime. The priests were set up in this course of 24 families, and they would come to the temple twice a year plus festivals, but they would come twice a year for their cycle. And when they were there in their cycle of service, there were so many of them that they would cast these lots and they would offer incense twice a day. Somebody would be chosen to offer incense in the morning at the time of the sacrifice, and somebody would be chosen in the afternoon to offer sacrifice, and we're told that they really would get the chance once in a lifetime. You know, you hear something as a once-in-a-lifetime chance for the priest. This was a once-in-a-lifetime chance to offer incense in the temple. And probably Zechariah went in by himself. There were other times in this procedure of their daily sacrifice, daily incense offering, and daily prayers that there might be as many as five of them in the, not the Holy of Holies, but the holy place, offering and rearranging or taking care of, rearranging the fire so that it would continue burning, taking care of the lampstand so that they would continue burning, and doing the ministry of the priests. And Zechariah is chosen by lot. Now, oftentimes we think of choosing something by lot. To us, it may be like casting dice of some kind. To them, it was probably they had the names of families, or somehow they had these stones that they would use to help choose whose day it was. And it just happens that God was present in this day, taking care of how the lot fell, and He chose Zechariah. You see, the sign doesn't begin with what the angel says to Zechariah. The sign doesn't begin later in the story, but the sign begins with the choosing of Zechariah. He was chosen by lot. He was chosen by God because God was about to work, and Zechariah was part of the plan. He was one of the pieces that God was going to use to carry out His plan. And so there's the choosing of Zechariah, but then there is the sign in and of itself, and that is the muting of his voice. Zechariah is speaking to the angel, and one minute he can talk, and the next minute yeah, the next minute he can't. It's like today we don't think that much about it. I was just waiting to see how long it took somebody to get uncomfortable to say something. Today we don't think that much about it because we hold these little black boxes in our hands with buttons all over them, and we mash one that has the picture of a speaker with an X through it or just a speaker in red, and you mash that button and all of a sudden the TV goes quiet. It's muted. But imagine if you're walking along with somebody and you get tired of them talking and you reach into your pocket and you pull out a remote and hit the mute button and suddenly they're quiet. We think it would be kind of neat sometimes, but you know what? Are you saying she takes your batteries, Dave, so that she mutes you? I'm going to get him in trouble here. We think it would be kind of neat, but really it probably wouldn't. It probably wouldn't be that, because somebody else might do it to us. There are some, I think, that if they had one, they'd use it on me after a few minutes on Sunday morning. I won't mention any names, but he just raised his hand. But Zechariah is talking, and then at the angel's words, Zechariah is silent. He can't say a thing. And the way the story is told, especially if you look forward and you read the next part of Zechariah and Elizabeth's story when John is born, it looks like it isn't just that Zechariah was mute, but he was deaf as well. That it wasn't just that he couldn't speak, but he couldn't hear either. And often, not most of the time, but often, those two things can go together, where you can become mute and deaf. And to him, that's what took place. And it wasn't a gradual thing. It isn't that he lost his hearing and lost his voice. But he was instantly quiet and could say no more. And so we have the second part of the sign. The first part was the choosing of Zechariah. The second part is the muting of Zechariah. The third thing is the pregnancy of Elizabeth. Because after all, as nicely as he puts it, Elizabeth was unable to have children. She was barren to start with, and now she was too aged to have children anymore. She had gone through that stage of life when you go from the ability to have kids as a woman to not being able to have kids. And so when Elizabeth becomes pregnant, it is a part of the sign that God is working, that God is doing what He has said He would do. And just in case you're wondering, as you read through the story, there are times when God is going to do something and God is speaking to us that we have to take part in what happens. Zechariah and Elizabeth had to play a role in this sign that God gives to them, if you understand what I'm talking about. And so here it is, the barren woman who is too old to have children is suddenly pregnant. What Elizabeth and Zechariah had prayed for years and never experienced. What they had hoped for and longed for, and probably given up hoping and longing for, suddenly came to pass after Zechariah went home from the temple. and God is at work and the sign is there. And then comes the fourth part of the sign, or the fourth sign. I'm not sure exactly how I would categorize this in the whole scheme of what God is doing and how God is pointing to the accuracy and the truthfulness of the message. And that is the fact that we didn't read this far, but if you read ahead into Luke chapter 2, or actually, excuse me, the end of Luke chapter 1, what you'll find is that after the time has come for Elizabeth to give birth to a child, she gives birth to the son, and the eighth day, when they would circumcise him and give the child its official name, they would officially name the child. Elizabeth says, "We're going to name him John." And the family and other people who are there to celebrate the circumcision of this young boy, they look at her and say, No, you can't name this child John. After all, there is nobody in your family named John. We can go back, we can trace the lineage, we can look and see that there is not a John to be had, and it's normal to name the child after somebody in the family. And so the crowd says, well, you should name him Zechariah, after his father. And she says, no, we're going to name him John. And they turn to Zechariah and say, this is part of the reason we think he was deaf, besides just unable to speak. It's because it says that they made signs to him to try to figure out what he was doing. And they got him this wax covered board that they would write in, and he wrote, his name is John. And when he wrote John and the people saw it, God pushed the button on the side of his remote and Zechariah could speak. As quickly as he went from speaking to mute, he went from mute to speaking. You see, God is working out this story, and God is getting ready to do some things, and he wants to make certain. He wants to make certain that people will listen to the message that Zechariah is going to speak. He wants Zechariah to be unquestioning about the fact that God is going to carry out the promise that he had made through his angel and that he had made through his messengers in the past. He wanted Zechariah to be sure and certain that yes, his salvation, his Messiah, his chosen king, his promised seeds to Abraham and to Adam was coming. And he made sure that Zechariah would believe the message that was spoken. And I think that's important. I think it's important that he gives Zechariah the sign, because he makes this promise that Zechariah has heard before. And Zechariah probably doesn't live to see the ministry of his son. Zechariah was advanced in age, probably in his later period of his ability to work in the temple. And so he probably would stop working in the temple, and probably in the 30, probably around 30 years that transpires between the birth of John and the beginning of John's public ministry out in the wilderness. It's hard to say public ministry when he goes out and he secludes himself from the public in some ways. But he goes out and he begins his ministry, his public ministry in the desert, in the wilderness. And Zechariah probably doesn't live long enough to see that. And so for Zechariah and for Elizabeth, the signs, the promises, the signs are an indication that even though they won't see it, they can believe the promises of God will be fulfilled. You see, God fulfills the promise of the birth of a child, but they probably don't live to see the beginning of the ministry of their son, and they are even less likely to have experienced and seen the ministry of Jesus, who John was coming to proclaim and prepare the way for. And so the sign was important for them, that they could trust God even though they might not see what God does. It was a sign for those who were present and saw and heard about these things. It was a sign that God was about to fulfill His promise, and they should be expectantly watching for the fullness of God's work. And some of them were, and some of them weren't. But the sign was there to open their eyes and open their hearts. And for you and me, the sign of Zechariah is a reminder to us that God will fulfill His promises. The church has been waiting for almost 2,000 years for Jesus Christ to come again, but Scripture tells us that He will. That one day Jesus Christ will return to gather His children home. That there is a day of salvation and a day of judgment that is coming when Jesus Christ returns. And for you and me, as we look backwards, no, we weren't present. We weren't in the crowd waiting in the temple court on the day that Zechariah got to offer incense. But Luke records the story for us. Luke records the story for us, and we don't just get the beginning of the sign, we get all of the sign as it's put together so that we can look at what God has done in the past and we can say that we believe that God will do what God has promised to do in His time and in His perfect plan. And while you and I may not see His return, we can believe that He is offering salvation to all people. Though we might not be some of those who are caught up to meet the Lord in the air at His coming, as Paul writes in 1 Corinthians 15, we can know that that promise stands true. Because we can look at the promise that God made to His people in the past, and we can look at the signs that He gave to Zechariah, and we can see the fulfillment of the signs and the fulfillment of the promise, and then we can know that God will fulfill His promises once again. And the one promise that He makes is the promise of salvation to those who will call upon the name of the Lord. He promises salvation to those who will trust Him and be obedient to His call in their lives. And so this morning we're going to give you the opportunity, if you have never made that commitment, to exhibit, to show your commitment to Him and to accept His offer of salvation in the waters of baptism. We'll celebrate with you, we'll visit with you about what that means and what it looks like if you're not quite there yet. But for the rest of us this morning, it's our responsibility to take the message of salvation to others. We may not see the results in those that we share the gospel with, but it's no less important for us to share. Because God can work in their lives if the seed is planted. And it's our call to believe and to trust and to live like we believe that Jesus Christ could come today. Or He may tarry for another 2,000 years. Either way, we're to live lives of faithful service to Him. Let's stand together as we sing this next song. And if you need to make a commitment, if you need to make a decision, you can either come forward as we sing or you can catch me when we're done and I'd love to visit with you.